The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Yeah, good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We had a lovely chat with Mitch Albom yesterday. And you'll know Mitch from Tuesdays at Murray's and all those books over the years. And his recent one is Finding Chica. And it's an amazing book, and it's the story of how he brought an orphan back from Haiti, himself and his wife Janine. And little Chica had been diagnosed with a very rare brain tumour. And it's the story of how they loved her and lost her. And anyway, it's there if you missed it, and you can go to the RTE website and listen to it back as a podcast. Now, ray@rte.ie, we got this in overnight. I love these ones. Dear Ray, I'm writing to share a good news story with you. Yay! One which I hope will remind people that a little kindness can go a long, long way. Yesterday, in the awful wind and rain, my sister Margaret and I set off from Dublin to drive to St. Conlett Cemetery in Kildare Town. Very familiar with that. Our mother, Mary Max Day, passed away in January 2018 in her 100th year, and she is buried there alongside our father, Michael, who passed away in 1987. In the boot of our car, we had 5 bags of granite chippings, which we wanted to lay on top of our parents' grave. The bags were heavy to carry, and we knew that between the two of us, we would have great difficulty lifting them from the boot. We planned to do a number of trips from the car to the grave, taking small bucketfuls at a time, and thought we would be there for at least an hour. As the weather was so awful, we were hoping that we could get parked relatively close to the entrance of the graveyard, which is not always possible. On the journey down, I had a quiet chat with my dad and asked him if he might exercise his heavenly influence so that this task might not be as tricky as we were anticipating. Worth the go, I thought to myself. He's great for helping me find parking spaces when I call upon him. I thought my Jenny was the only one who did that. She constantly calls on her dad, the late Mick Kelly, to find her parking spaces, and usually he gets them. Anyway, back to Margaret and her sister. We arrived at the cemetery to find that the main gate was open, which was unusual. So we wondered if there was a funeral arriving. I noticed two gentlemen standing just inside the gate. So I got out of the car and went over to talk with them. They said there was no funeral coming, but there was hedge cutting going on, which was why the gate was open. I told them that we were going to tend to our parents' grave, which was only a few metres inside the entrance. They asked me who our parents were, and both men knew our family well and instantly related stories to us of our father. Before we knew it, they suggested Margaret reverse her car in the entrance of the cemetery. Without a moment's hesitation, the boot was opened. 5 bags of granite seamlessly made their way to the grave in the strong arms of these two men. Plant containers and floral arrangements were set aside. Granite bags cut open. The granite was spread. At the same time, stories of local GAA clubs were exchanged. Our father played with Ellistown, who were Kildare County champions back in the 40s. One of the men was a supporter of the rival club, the Kildare Towers. Well, they're just known locally as the Towers. But he jokingly assured us that he would put this rivalry aside on this occasion. Banter combined with laughter and stories of people from the past were effortlessly exchanged. We were strangers only minutes before, but in that moment, we were behaving like trusted friends. To our shock, only 15 minutes later, the task was complete. This was something that my sister and I thought we would find distressing and very sad, but it had been turned into a heartwarming, shared human experience, which was all down to the kindness of strangers. One man was named Danny, and the other man's name we didn't get. But we want to say thank you to you both, to the both of them. The impact of these two men taking the time to help us so spontaneously will remain with us forever. I hope they hear this, or at least that someone who knows them may recognise them and let them know how grateful we are. Do we have a name for that? I know Margaret's one of the ladies, but do we have a name on the... We'll get... What? Maria. Maria and Margaret, sisters. The Max Day's sisters, well, that would have been their maiden names. I don't know if they have a married name now. And thanks for that email. It's great to hear that sort of a story, isn't it? And well done to Danny and his mate for carrying in the granite to the graveside and having the chats about the old days when Ellistown were county champions. That's a long time ago. If it was in a pub quiz, it wouldn't be a sports question, it'd be a history question. Yeah, I remember lining out for, was it playing for the Towers or Moortown against Ellistown one day? And the lad I was marking was wearing a cloth cap. That's the type of football team that is. So we had a chat about the fact that he was wearing a hat, playing GAA. Saoirse got onto as well to ray@rte.ie overnight. She's from the Dublin Simon community. And they have two charity shops in Dublin, Camden Street and Thomas Street, and they're looking for specific things at this time of the year. So suits, shirts, jackets and trousers. I'm sure this will go for charity shops all over the country. Dresses, skirts, blouses and tops, jumpers, cardigans and coats, jeans, shorts, leggings and tracksuits, unused underwear, nightwear, shoes and runners. I wonder, do more and more people put that sort of stuff into those recyclable things alongside the bottle bank and not bring them to their charity shops? Anyway, they're looking for all those things. And handbags, jewellery, belts, hats, scarves, gloves and any sort of bric-a-brac, crockery, pictures, ornaments, clocks, vases or vases, frames, tableware, glasses, linen, duvet covers, pillowcases, sheets, throws, curtains, books, books and more books. Sounds like the theme tune to Only Fools and Horses. And all household items that are in working order and in a safe condition. All our staff are certified PAT testers. That's portable appliance testing. So that's Saoirse. She is the marketing officer for Dublin Simon Community. And you can drop them into their Camden Street or Thomas Street shops. And if you're around the country, if there's a local charity shop, you can follow suit there and take Saoirse's list and clean out the cupboards at home. Make room for all the stuff that you'll get over Christmas that you may not use but will take up space in your house. Like a €350 lid for your jar of Nutella. I kid you not. You can buy such a thing in Weir and Sons in Dublin. Yeah, that's what it's a lid for a jar of Nutella. And it'll cost you €350. It's solid silver. And seemingly, according to the people in Weir and Sons, there is a demand for this sort of thing. Who and why? More money than sense, I would think. And if that's too expensive for you, you can get a top for your Coleman's mustard jar for €130. And then if you want it personalised, as in name, date, €17 extra. When I hear things like that, and I know I shouldn't be a killjoy and a bah humbug, but there's a vulgarity about that sort of thing that I find distasteful. I know, look, there's a man I know who could afford that, Steve Thompson. He's the man in England, van driver and handyman. He won 105 million on the Euro Millions. He's 42 and has three children. And he's smiling out from all the papers today. And I was looking at him thinking, I hope this doesn't ruin your life. Steve, because it, I know you're saying, how possibly could 105 million ruin your life? Well, it has ruined people's lives. And he said he's going to keep working, keep driving his van, keep driving around. And how long will that last for? He says he's going to help out family and local community with the 105 million. He said one would have been enough, as in 1 million would have been enough. Now he has 105 million. Yeah, he'll go back to work for a week, I'd say. And then when he's probably still in shock. You know that thing which I find is very consoling in life, that we always return to our baseline level of happiness or sadness, whatever that is in our lives. So, for example, Steve, he'll spike. It'll spike. You know, 105 million. He'll have a spike. But eventually, he'll return to the same level of happiness that he was the minute before he found out he won the Euro Millions. Which is reassuring, because if you have a spike the other way, as in a trough, that eventually you'll return to the level you were at before you had that bad news or that tragedy in your life. So it's sort of the equilibrium of life, which is, I think, is reassuring. A lovely picture in the Examiner today of Lainey, Josh, Mia, Sarah and Rory, and they're all students in Canon Sheehan Primary School in Dunnerail in County Cork. And they've got a new water fountain. And all of the students have got metal bottles, metal water bottles. And the reason they have the fountain and the metal water bottles is to eliminate the use of single-use plastic water bottles. They were using 23,000 a year in Canon Sheehan Primary School. It doesn't say how many pupils are in the school, but if that's the usage in that small little school in Dunnerail, because that's a small little town, imagine the number of plastic bottles that have been used in the country and then in Europe and then in the world. And you realise that we have a bit of a problem. So well done to Canon Sheehan Primary School in Dunnerail, getting the water fountain and the metal bottles. What else have we got there for you? Here's an interesting one. I'll leave you with this one and then we'll go to a bit of music. The number of e-babies born to parents who met online will overtake those whose parents met offline in the year 2037. Academics have forecast. Now, why did they bother forecasting that? But anyway, researchers have looked at data from the dating app eHarmony and the Office for National Statistics. This is in the UK, but I'm sure we're similar here. They project that the birth rate of children born to couples who meet on dating apps and sites into the future is going to outstrip that born to the others. I don't know what that means about anything. Well, I suppose it means that despite 15 years ago where people turned up their noses and looked down their noses at people who met online, that it's completely acceptable now. And I would imagine, as from those statistics, in the future, most people will meet online as opposed to at a family wedding or in the local pub or in the local nightclub. 5 on 5, 5 on RaidRT.ie. I saw that Euro Millions winner, Ray. Why did he go public with that win? Don't know. It's a difficult thing to hide if you're sitting on 105 million. And then you wouldn't be able to enjoy it if you had to, behave as if you didn't have 105 million. I'm surprised that a charity shop asked him for books, because increasingly charity shops will only take one or two books at a time. Yes, that struck me as well in Saoirse's email. I do love charity shops. Where would we be without them in so many ways? Asks Brendan. Aaron here. Who'd spoon out the money for that Nutella lid? Hey, badumtsh. Would you spend €350 on a solid silver lid for your Nutella? You'll have to, if you say yes, you'll have to explain yourself to me, please. Thank you very much. 5 on 5, 5 on RaidRT.ie. Good afternoon. Suzanne Vega with Joe Jackson on piano and left of centre. Somebody wants to know if that was Kim Wilde. Well, there's your answer. Not Kim Wilde, Suzanne Vega. Why do people say when they win millions on the lotto, it won't change me in the least? Makes you wonder why they did it in the first place. Should have just went to bingo and stay happy, says Reg. And my 11-year-old daughter and I saw that Nutella silver lid in town last Saturday, and she was shocked at the price, and she said, who would buy or want that? And she's 11. And Marie has been back on, who sent us the email about the two men in the cemetery down in Kildare. And she says, just caught the end of it there. We listened back on playback. I hope the two gents hear about it. Attached is the photo of the Ellistown team from 1944. It's a history question, all right, but history fondly remembered. And there it is, Ellistown Gaelic Football Club, winners County Kildare Senior Championship 1944. That's a great picture. We must put that up, if we get permission from Maria, up on our blog. Aaron here, I read that out already. Now, we were talking about calendars last week, charity calendars, and we got a good few in, and they continue to come in. Not a lot, but dribs and drabs. The latest one is a 2020 calendar from Pearl Dixon. And she has a handwritten letter which says, I've made this calendar for 2020 with a look back at the 1920s. There are 130 people in it from the Cavan Monaghan area dressed up to look like they lived 100 years ago. The photographs are taken in beautiful venues in black and white around Cavan and Monaghan, Cabrick Castle, Castle Leslie, Doonaree, to name a few places. It's a fundraiser for orphans in Belarus International Orphan Development Programme. And Pearl says she's going to be travelling out there January 1st, bringing Christmas to the orphans and upgrading the orphanages. The calendar costs €10. And if you go to dixonpearl@gmail.com, you can find out how you can get it there. And Pearl says she's going to be selling it in the Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary at the Antiques and Vintage Fair this weekend. And it's a lovely looking calendar. And if you have a calendar out there and you want a quick plug on the radio, send it in to us. And next year it could develop into something a lot bigger. The Charity Calendar of the Year Awards. Just to remind you about Ray's Christmas Crackers, on the 7th of December on the telly, we want to surprise people in a sort of Cilla Black way. We did it last year and the year before, and we've done it on the radio over the years. So if there's somebody in your life that you want to say a big thank you to, that they've been particularly supportive, helpful to you this year or maybe in your life, it could be your mum, your dad, a daughter, a son, sister, brother, next door neighbour, whatever. That could be it. So send us an email about that to raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie. Or is there somebody that missed out over the years on Christmas and that now they're at a stage in their life where they're ready to have Christmas? But we could make this Christmas particularly special for them. Send that email into us, raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie. Or is there somebody who's away from home, who can't get home, that we might be able to pull a few strings and get them home? If that's your story, send it into us, raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie, and we'll be meeting some of you on the telly on December 7th. The other thing that's happened on December 7th is the final of Stand Up and Be Funny. And the final heat is tomorrow in the Rosie and Dove in Galway from 8 o'clock, free of charge. If you want to come along for a bit of a laugh, you're very welcome. We'll be there 8 o'clock tomorrow in the Rosie and Dove, the final heat of Stand Up and Be Funny. Right now, we take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
515 have on for your text. Now, I don't know if you know this, but one of the fastest growing areas in technology is VR, virtual reality. Now, Aviva are using VR, virtual reality, to educate people about road safety. In particular, they have a thing which allows people, I suppose, to imagine they're in a car accident. Teddy Daly is head of marketing for Aviva Ireland, and he joins us in studio with his VR gadget. Good afternoon, Teddy.
Hi, Ray.
Now, this is a thing that started in England, in the UK.
Yes.
So describe what people see.
Okay, what it is Leicestershire Fire Brigade, they actually created a virtual car crash aimed at kind of teenagers. So it's a virtual reality headset. You're a passenger in the car. And basically, there's some messing going on, and there's four kids in the car, and they're involved in a fairly traumatic car accident. They hit a tractor, and you can actually look around the car. You are the passenger.
Yes. So you can look around. You can see there are two passengers in the back.
Yeah.
You can see that the driver, who's a young man,
yeah,
is on his phone showing you a picture. All of those things. And it brilliantly captures the atmosphere in a car where there's four young people having the crack.
Yeah, it's almost as if you're there. You're kind of nervous. You know, you're looking at the driver. He's messing. You kind of feel a bit tense looking at him, you know, and you get the visual motion. You really feel as if you're in it.
Yeah. And you know from research that young people, unfortunately, are prone to die in car accidents, particularly passengers.
Yeah, look, they're statistically the most likely to be involved in a serious car accident, particularly young men.
Right.
Young males are.
And it's interesting that this is on a country road, because I was only reading today in an article by Brian Hutton. Analysis by the Road Safety Authority shows almost 8 in 10 road deaths during the first half of this year were in rural areas, and the majority were on 80 kilometre zones.
Yeah.
So, and this is exactly what this depicts.
Yeah, it's done very specifically. I mean, these are the group of people that we need to try and hit home how dangerous a car accident can be. And it's, you know, you can hear about it in theory, but it's only if you ever actually were either in one, God forbid. But if you can experience even like a fraction of what an eye actually like, it might just help change
your behavior. And that's what we're trying to do, change behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it goes to the accident, and then you're still there after the accident when the emergency services arrive.
Yeah, look, it's 2 minutes you're in the car and there's messing going on. There's an accident, and it kind of, the screen goes black. But when you wake up, you are in a fairly horrific car accident. One of the kids in the back seat has gone through the windscreen. There's blood everywhere. The driver is bleeding in pain and screaming. It's pretty horrendous. It's pretty shocking. It's pretty harrowing. The next thing you see the emergency services, like you've got the paramedics there, you've got the police there, the helicopters. You are in it.
Yes.
And you look down and your own legs, there's blood everywhere. I mean, it's pretty visceral. It's pretty harrowing, but it's really effective, you know.
You see, measuring the effectiveness of these things is difficult as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look. You can lecture. I mean, I have kids myself. You can lecture them all you want, but if you experience something for yourself,
okay.
We're not.
So where will this be, and who will get to put it on their heads?
Well, basically, just to give you a bit of background. Last year, Cork County Council, Caroline Casey is the Road Safety Officer in Cork County Council, and Garda Jonathan McCarthy of Skull Garda Station, and they came to us with the idea. This was there that they come across this virtual reality clip, and they were looking for some financing to see if they could bring it to the schools. So we financed a pilot program, and it went incredibly well over the last year in Cork. They brought it to 4,000 students. You know, a couple of hundred schools or 100 schools in Cork have seen it, and it really works. You know, the kids who experience it, it really does affect them, you know.
Yes.
And they say that afterwards. So with that in mind, then Aviva decided to finance a full rollout of this programme to every single county council in Ireland. So in September, we brought every road safety officer together, there was 29 of them, to the Aviva Stadium, and we basically have given them all virtual reality headsets. So there's 500 virtual headsets have gone to the county council.
So how many is that each? Like, so
Well, it depends. About 15 in a set. But it's
okay.
A 7-minute clip.
And is it advised that 15 do it together? So they, it's sort of like a shared experience nearly.
Very much so, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then they can comment on it afterwards.
Yeah, so we launched it here in Dublin yesterday at Trinity Comprehensive in Ballymun. The Lord Mayor was there. We had 40 transition year students. And so they're all experiencing it together.
Mm.
And it's fascinating to watch them.
And what was the reaction?
Some of them are a bit upset. Some of them are holding each other's hands. You know, the lads are messing with each other. But like every single one of them, once they've done it, can say, yeah, okay, I see it. You know,
yeah.
It does affect.
It does. No, it does. And it's very well done. Very well done. So there are 500 of those around the country. And I suppose if schools want to get the road safety officer to come along, they'll.
Well, look, that's
the RSA.
That's what we're here today. I mean, it's done in conjunction with the county councils and the road safety officers, but also in conjunction with the Garda Síochána. They've been very much supportive of this whole program. So there's a Your Life for a Choice program, and the idea is that they will go into to schools and give a short presentation just on some of the risks. And then you experience it yourself. And I think that's great. Where it might, bring it to life.
I get a sense, it's only a sense, that younger people are going to be more responsible on the roads. Because there's an older generation who drank and drove and all those sort of things. I think younger people are a lot more conscious of how important it is to be safe while driving.
Yeah, interesting though. You see the research that we launched that the 1 in 3 aren't always using their safety belt.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was growing up, and you're probably the same, remember there was a big campaign to get people to wear a safety belt. I think everyone universally wears a safety belt now. But I was kind of fascinated to see that 1 in 3 admitted that they didn't always use their safety belt. 50% of them said they were texting, admitting to texting in the car.
Mm.
Personally, I look around, I think probably more and more people are texting in the car. It's really, I think what showed in the VR clip, it just shows one split second where you're not paying attention can have absolutely catastrophic consequences.
Yeah.
It's just that split second, and that's what happened. All of a sudden you're messing in the car, bang.
It's a great initiative, and hopefully it will save lives. Teddy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks a million.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Owen Colfer joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Owen.
How's it going, Ray?
Now, how many people have you spoken to in the last 5 weeks?
Oh, God. I'd say thousands.
Thousands?
Thousands and thousands, yeah. I don't know how many listened, maybe two. Two people.
So I'm fascinated by book tours, and you don't often get to talk to an author about the actual book tour, because usually, and I'm going to talk to you about the book as well, but just the logistics of a book tour. So you've done the States.
Yeah, I did the States. I did the UK first, and then I went for 2 weeks to the States, and then I came back for another week to the UK to finish up. So I'm doing a few days now in Ireland.
And what's your average day then on a book tour?
On the average day, you would get up quite early, often as early as 4 a.m. To go get an early flight into the next town. You do a school event, maybe two school events in the gym.
Assembly hall.
Yeah. And I do kind of a show, so it's like a play. So you do that twice, and then you might have an hour or two. Then you do an early evening show in the bookstore that's sponsoring the events. And then if there's a late flight to the next town or it's drivable, you do it. And if there isn't, you stay in the hotel and then get up again the next morning.
I'm tired just listening to you.
I know. But it's you do.
And you do a show. When you say you do a show, what is it?
It's like a one-man show where I link the characters in my books back to my family members through slides and stories.
All right.
And I've been doing a version of this for many years, but it's very funny and very, very energetic. And I come across really well. My brothers come across very badly. And that is why, you know.
But it's energy sapping.
It is. But when you're doing it,
you're buzzed up.
You feel great. But just, I really don't like airports now. And I really don't like trains, but sure, at the same time you think, there's so many writers who'd kill to be on a tour. Last year I went on tour with Andrew Duncan and Giovanni Rigano. We did Illegal. I was in here for that, and they had never been on a tour. Like, we're all the same age, and I was kind of jaded going out, and they were full of enthusiasm, and I felt like such a Scrooge, so eventually their good humor communicated itself to me, and I suppose I was a bit better humored about it, and I haven't forgotten that. And I'm trying to employ that attitude.
So you're touring the Fowl Twins.
Yeah.
which is sort of a spin-off of Arctic
South. It is
South.
Absolutely a spin-off.
Yes, yeah, not sort of. It's a spin-off. Why did I say sort of? It's,
I know, you're trying to...
it's a verbal tick.
Like it was an
it's
original
a
thing.
Tick.
It's literally...
literally. Basically, actually. Yeah.
Randomly. Random and literal are two words I don't like anymore.
So. My children are saying literally. Oh, my seven-year-old is saying literally. Yeah. Stop saying literally.
Like, it's literally a crossroad. No, it is a crossroad. You don't have to say literally. There it is. I can see it from the window. So,
and as a wordsmith, as a writer, do you spot those things before everybody else spots
I
them?
I do, and I'm a bit pedantic about it if it's a lyric. Like there was a Madness lyric I remember that was grammatically incorrect, and I kept going on about this Madness lyric, and my friends like, they were like,
"Yeah, you need to.
You're not really getting the spirit of madness, are you?" So I stopped talking about that. But I do, if it's written down, I see it. And in most of my books, there would be a tiny mistake somewhere that slipped through, and that's all I see is that apostrophe.
Ah, yes.
And that would bug me. I was on.
And whose fault is that?
It's probably mine initially, but then it should have been spotted by the 20 editors. But the worst one is if it's in the code. In the old Artemis Fowl books, there was a code along the bottom. And I was on a big show and on the BBC, I think, and they had a live audience, and the child said, "I found a mistake in your code." And I said very patronizingly, "I think you'll find that's not the case, young lady." Ha ha ha. And then the camera went right in and she pointed at it, and it was a massive mistake. So obviously I had security escort out of the building.
And you've never been as definitive since?
No. I said, "That's perhaps right, but I'm very old. I don't remember."
So things are going to change for you next year when the movie's out.
Yeah, well,
do you think that'll be the end of book tours? Or,
well, I'm kind of pulling. This is the first major book tour I've done in a long time, because I when I hit 50, I kind of, it's not like I'm as fit as Darcy. I have to pull back on this kind of thing, and so I've only been doing a week here and a week there. So this is the first 4 weeks I've done, and now I remember why I haven't been doing them. But I just wanted to give the new series a good old, you know.
So Miles and Beckett, and they're Artemis Fowl's younger twin brothers,
named after Miles na Gcapaillín and Samuel Beckett, two of my heroes. So yeah, and they're the younger brothers,
and they're not paternal twins. They're the other dizygotic twins.
Dizygotic. So is that's paternal, is it?
Is it?
But they're non-identical. But yes, they're actually the first non-identical twins to be born conjoint.
Right.
Just from there, that doesn't work on radio, the thing I'm doing now. But just from wrist to little finger.
Side of their hands, yeah.
So, and they were sliced apart. So they're very connected. And one is kind of a feral, you know, outdoorsy, jumping
That's
off
Beckett.
Cliffs. That's Beckett. And he's based on my son Finn a little bit. And the other guy, Miles is very much a clone of Artemis, except he thinks Artemis is a total idiot. So they go about trying to create their own legacy, if you will. And it's a lot of fun. I think it's funnier than the first ones. It's a more direct, straight through plot. The world, Artemis world, was getting very convoluted towards the end, and I wanted to strip it all back and go back to the basics with these guys. So they find a little baby troll. They're being chased by a nun interrogator, which is called a nun interrogator, if you didn't know, and also the Duke of Silly, Lord Teddy Bleedem Dry, who is trying to get this troll. So it's
Teddy Bleedem Dry.
I know, yeah. You're the only one who got that.
But he's trying to get this troll because the serum from the troll is the secret to eternal life.
In laboratory conditions,
right? Okay.
He can make himself a lot older while staying young, and that is he is an immortalist.
Right.
He wants to stay alive as long as he can.
So are you an immortalist?
Obviously, look at my head. No. I'm actually the opposite. So I'm only 54, but I look 110. So that's...
I don't know. When is this over? Is this over soon? Are we there yet?
Like, does the world need another Leprechaun book? Really? Does they? What? Serious? Oh, God. So, but luckily I'm moving on to more serious things, like dragons, you know.
Yes.
Time travel stuff. I don't know. So, yeah.
Time travel is fascinating. Were you always fascinated with time travel?
I was, and I've done several books about time travel, and all I've learned is that it's very difficult to write books about time travel and keep it straight, you know, what you've done and what's possible. And there's just a whole section of the internet devoted to pointing out mistakes in time travel books. So I vowed I would never do it again, but that was a past version of me. So maybe it will happen.
So... We have to, it's the obligatory question on the movie. Yeah. So it's next May.
It's definitely, you know, how many times have I said definitely on the show? Yeah. It's definitely next May on the 29th, Memorial Day weekend. It's in the calendar, it's in the can.
And is your viewing of it imminent? You haven't seen it yet.
I've seen some of it. I think I'll be seeing it this month, which is great, but I gladly...
Now, there's only 4 days left in this month. Is it next month?
Oh, next month, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
So, but part of me would like to not see it and just turn up on the night with my kids, and if they're free, and see it then. But no, I will probably go in and look. But in a way, you're better not seeing it, because if there's something that annoys you, there's nothing you can do. And even if it's amazing, I'm sure it'll be one or two things.
But you said to somebody that you're philosophical about it. It's not like that little... apostrophe that's missing, or the code that's wrong, that you've sort of, in a way, I'm very aware now of all my little verbal tics because I'm talking to you, but you've given it to somebody.
It's not my baby anymore, it's someone else's, and I am philosophical about it, and I'm laid back, and I think I'll be less judgmental. I find that if I'm in doing a project with someone else, like the recent play with Dustin, that I'm able to enjoy it. Like, I can actually appreciate it because I'm not completely responsible for it. And stuff like that. But this is, and the movie is going to be like that because it's...
There was an illness in our house, so I didn't get to see it. But it's touring.
It's going to go back out in 2020. It was such a joy to do, and he's such a professional. Like, you and I know that he's not like... the public persona, in that he wears a smoking jacket most of the time. he has a kale smoothie every morning, and that he really speaks like he's from Doki. But, you know, the public persona is quite energetic, and he'd be sitting there reading War and Peace in a smoking jacket. But no, I never had so much fun, and you know what it's like. I actually became the surrogate you, whereas I just sat there with a pained look on my face.
You can't say that. You can't say that.
I just had to take it every night. It was like when he would put in another line, and if someone came in, he would just totally go off the script and nail that person. And it was like Joe Duffy was in one night, and poor old Joe. He got her in the neck several times, but
that's ad living, and I thought you were very strict about.
I was trying to be. I was trying to. Well, you know what that's like. Yeah. As soon as you say to Dustin, stick to the script. That's it. What you should say is under no circumstances
stick to the script.
Stick to that script, and then you could be lucky. But I can't wait for it to go.
Joe stopped me in the corridor.
Did he?
And he gave it a rave review.
He just laughed. I was sitting behind Joe. And I'd say he just started laughing. Now, a lot of the jokes are RTE-centric.
Right.
So I knew all the people who were being slagged.
Right.
I didn't even know some of them.
And you wrote it.
Well, I didn't write those bits. He would just take a figuri and go off slagging off someone who's a researcher. I don't mean that in a bad way. About
researcher, I know what you mean. Yeah. He holds a grudge. Does Dustin.
Do you think? He invents the grudge. There is no grudge.
We put the call out to people. We got this sent over Twitter. Where is that one? We put the call out to ask some questions. We got this sent to Dorothy Molly. This is from 11-year-old. Yeah. It's a clip. You're going to play it. Sorry. See, there you go. That's new technology. Right. This is Dorothy Molloy, and she has a question for you. So you'll need to put on your headphones there. No, they're not plugged in. Put them on there.
It's a great station.
Right. Can you hear me in those? You can. Here we go.
Hi, Owen. What gave you the idea for Artemis Fowl? And why did you name Artemis Artemis?
Okay, that's two questions. So the first one is free, and then the second one
you charge.
Send a £5 postal order. No, the idea I got from my little brother Donald, and it was a photo of him when he was making his confirmation or communion. So he had a full suit on, but he also had a very mischievous look on his face, and I thought he looks like a little Bond villain. And that idea stuck with me for years, the idea that you could be a Bond villain at 10. And then I put it together with the fairy idea I had, and Artemis Fowl came up. And he was called Artemis Fowl because I was trying to come up with a name that meant something. And to fowl, the verb to fowl means to hunt creatures with wings. And the name Artemis is the Greek goddess of the hunt, and it was given to a boy if he proved to be an excellent hunter. So it was kind of an honorary name. And if you put all that together, you get the very excellent Hunter of Creature with Wings.
Right.
And of course, the creatures with wings are fairies.
Artemis Fowl. Yeah, right. Liz has been on. She says, all of my children have emigrated to Melbourne, Wellington, New York and Toronto. Finding ways to connect and keep up with the changes in their lives is vital. However, connecting with my grandchildren was never more important. Finn and Oisín live in Melbourne. Finn is 11, Oisín is 8. I wanted Finn to read Artemis Fowl before it hit the cinemas. I wanted him to imagine it in his own way.
Yeah.
Which is important.
It's very important. And I think your own way will never match up with what you see on the screen. And it's a very special and personal reason to read a book. So I think books have that little extra step on any other kind of media because most of it happens in your own head.
I posted the first book and waited for his response. He was so excited and told me he was reading it under his duvet with a torch at night. I sent him the next in the series and again the same reaction. When I was chatting to a friend, she said she would be able to get the third in the series to Owen, that's you, and perhaps he would sign it. Not only did Owen sign it, he gave Finn a beautifully signed copy of The Draft of Fowl Twins and a cartoon book for Oisín. Finn was beside himself with excitement. Can you believe such generosity? Thank you, Owen, so much for your generous gift, but also your gift in writing because it helps me connect to my two precious grandchildren.
Well, that's really nice.
Isn't it?
I didn't know how that was going to go. It might be Oisín and Finn thought the books were rubbish, so thanks for nothing. But I'm glad that I actually, you know.
Will we see any old characters in the Fowl Twins? Any hints of who they would be? Very excited for the new book, says that.
Yeah, we have some cameos. Holly has a cameo and also Artemis has a little cameo, but really it is the Twins book. And it's been doing really well. We've gotten some great reviews and great sales. So I'm very enthused, and it's nice to be back in the fairy world again.
Right. Okay. And where to next then?
Well,
because you've done everything. Like
You haven't done
non-fiction, have you?
No, that's actually true. I've done a lot of articles for newspapers.
Yes.
But I've never done a non-fiction work. I'm just interested in fiction, and there's so much to do. I mean, I'm trying to get the rights to a certain tranche of songs at the moment to do another musical. I want to go back on the road with Dustin. And I have a book coming out in January called High Fire, which is an adult fantasy book about a dragon who's living in Louisiana.
Right.
So it's like a noir, dragon noir. I'm trying to invent a new genre.
Right. No, I'm interested in the songs.
Yeah. I can't say what they are.
But you're looking for somebody's songs.
Yeah.
To put them together in a musical.
Yeah.
Like Queen did We Will Rock Me and Mamma Mia was ABBA.
I tried to get the Queen songs, but they weren't. we already have a big movie. And I remember I was walking down the road and I was annoyed because Queen had just turned me down. And I met Conor McPherson and I said, hey, Conor, what's up? I said, I'm annoyed because I just been turned down by Queen. He was like, oh, yeah, Bob Dylan just rang me. I said, shut up.
So you asked Queen. I was only, but,
oh,
but,
no, I did.
But they had their own musical, didn't
they? Yeah, they had. I just thought I could do.
Who did that? David
Ben
McDeal.
Elton.
No, Ben Elton. Sorry.
Yeah, it's great. But so I'm now on the trail of another group of, it's not all by the same author, that's the problem. But
are they international?
It would be UK, Ireland, most of them, I suppose, would be international, but it's like a 70s thing,
right.
So we'll see. But I love musical theatre. I work with Liam Bates mostly, the composer from Wexford, and we've done a few musicals, and of course, he did the songs in the Dustin Show. Mm.
So is that the dream then? A hit in the West End and bring it to Broadway?
Well, no. I mean, we have Holy Mary going into the Gaiety next May. And that for me is a dream come true.
Right.
You know, to get a play into the Gaiety, I've never managed to do that before. And now Breda Cash has managed to get Holy Mary in. And I'm really proud of that. And the girls in it are amazing. And the director is amazing. So yeah, that's going to be very exciting.
I see on Netflix that did you see that? Dolly Parton. They've 8 1-hour dramas based on Dolly Parton songs.
That is very interesting. I did see something about that. I'm interested to know what the songs are.
Yeah.
I think Dolly Parton is...
9 to 5 is one of them. And Jolene.
Yeah, Jolene. Well, Jolene is one of the greatest songs, I think.
Yeah, ever written.
Ever.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely amazing song. So yeah. I'll probably give it a look.
Right.
I'm more into Scandi crime. Then,
like The Bridge and that.
Oh, I love The Bridge. The Bridge is brilliant. Well, my favourite show at the moment is Schitt's Creek, and if you have not,
it's
absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because you think you're going to hate all these characters and laugh at them, but you end up loving them, every one of them. So if you haven't seen that.
What's her name? She was the mother in Home Alone.
Yeah, yeah. Maura Rose, yeah. So, and Bebe.
Is it Catherine O'Hara? Catherine O'Hara. Is that her name?
Yeah, Catherine O'Hara, O'Hara. Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing in it.
They're all, the cast is phenomenal. So,
We have a quick commercial break to take. Stay there, Owen, because I have a few more questions to ask you after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, The Foul Twins is the new book by Owen Colfer. Hi, Owen. I was just wondering whether we should ever expect another Artemis Fowl book that tells us about some of the events between Artemis Fowl, The Last Guardian, and The Foul Twins. Also, have an amazing day.
Oh, thank you. Well, I will have an amazing day. I mean, there's no plans to do another Fowl book, but I probably will fill in the gaps with just little bit nuggets of information in The Foul Twins. I think if you read The Foul Twins, you might actually find some of your questions answered, but... I am old. I've only so many years.
Will you stop saying you're old,
well,
please?
I know you're only saying that with such frustration because you're slightly older than me.
So, but you're not old.
Ray, you're old. Just like accept it, Ray.
Well, I'm not.
You're already well past the expectations of everybody. You can just relax now.
Okay, for you to say you have a movie coming out next year.
But I do find myself slowing down, though. I mean, I used to do two books a year. Now I do one book every 18 months. But that's my own choice. I think I'm just trying to make better books.
So. And you don't have to.
No, I don't have to. And that's why I love doing these little projects. And they're just as important to me, stuff like Dustin and musicals and plays.
And you never, well, I don't know, this should be a question. Did you ever feel that you were sacrificing, say, family time for your career?
I did. I mean, I remember being away a couple of times for Sean's birthday, and he, you know, luckily he only brings that up, you know, during the week.
Not on weekends.
And I was... Sean was born and I had booked in a tour, so he was like 2 weeks old and I had to go off on tour. So yeah, sometimes I do. But the thing is, when I'm home, I'm in the house, so I'm home all the time.
You're 100% there.
Yeah. So obviously I don't talk to anyone. Because I'm working. But no, I don't tour as much anymore and I like to be home now. And our son Finn is in London working, so I like...
What ages are the children?
Finn is 22. And he's working, he's doing an internship with the Times in London, which is great. And Sean is 16 and he's in transition year. Right. So he has some interesting stuff lined up. So, they're at very interesting times in their lives when in some ways they don't need us as much. They're quite independent. But it means that Jackie and I are we're kind of getting a little bits of our lives back. So we're going to more theatre. Jackie's coming with me if I travel to New York or London or places like that, which is brilliant. It's just a great period for us.
And a lot of the action in this book is set on Dalkey Island.
I have moved.
Have you been on Dalkey Island?
I have been. Yeah. I've been out on... It's the maddest thing. Myself and Jim Sheridan were working on a version of the script from Artemis Fowl, and he lived out in Dalkey at the time. In Collymore Road, and we used to row out to Dalkey Island and sit there with my laptop writing the script. So we went out there several times, and I'd say we nearly drowned a couple of times coming back. But I just thought this would be a great place. And the idea is that every criminal mastermind has an island there. And so I said, well, I'll give the boys this one. And so they moved from Fowl Manor to this Villa Eco, which they somehow got planning permission for in Dalkey. You know, I reckon if Jim got planning permission for that house, I definitely get permission for a villa on the island.
So you're going to go home now and talk to nobody, just sit in a darkened room.
You know, I look like I'm asleep on the sofa, but it's like it's dream time, Ray.
Right.
You're
creating a new book, new characters.
Yeah.
Owen, great to talk to you.
All right.
And you're not old.
I'm just kidding you.
Emails to ray@rte.ie and you can text us to 51551. Tell Owen Colfer thanks for Benny Babe and the Omar books. And somebody else says, loving the interview with Owen. Please say thank you to him for writing Going Potty all those years ago. My son is 27 now, but was scared to use the school toilets when he started school in 1998 as a result of Owen's book. And what was the show you recommend with Owen there? Catherine O'Hara is the lead. Schitt's Creek is the name of it. And it's on Netflix, I think. and it's 25 minutes long. It's a comedy, but it's very good. It's a very well-off family who fall on hard times, and I think he ends up owning a town called Schitt's Creek, and they have to move to it. Dan Levy is the writer. Now, we've been talking about calendars and charities, and as a result of that, we got an email from Carla, and she said, "I heard your show last week when you were admiring the cute, adorable puppies on one of the charity calendars. I work for Autism Assistance Dogs, and we are urgently in need of puppy fosterers based in the Munster area to help us give our puppies the best start to go on to change the world for children with autism." And I remember about 10 years ago, I heard a brilliant documentary about Dogs for Autism on RT Radio 1. And so we're happy to help out. So Carla's on the line now. Good afternoon, Carla.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Tell people what these assistant dogs do for children who have autism.
Well, they're actually a real lifeline, because families who have children with severe autism now would struggle to get out and about and do things that we would take for granted. So, you know, just shopping trips, walks in the park, things like that can be absolutely impossible for these families, because the children get so distressed when in busy environments and things like that. So the role of the dog actually is to provide safety for the child. So the child would actually be tethered to the dog, and the dog would kind of act as an anchor and make sure that the child is kept safe. And the dog would respond then to the voice commands of the parent that's handling the dog.
Yes.
So these children wouldn't really have much sense of danger. They'd be prone to running off. They wouldn't really have any sense of danger. You know, they wouldn't be able to cross roads safely and things like that. So, I mean, the main role of the dog is to keep those children safe so they can go out in public and get out and about. But they also reduce anxiety quite significantly for the children and for the family, because, of course, you know, it's a huge relief for the parent being able to go into a shopping centre and know that they haven't got to watch every exit and, you know, keep a tight grasp on the child in case they might go out of sight and disappear, you know.
And do they enhance the social interaction of the child?
Yeah, well, a lot of the parents who receive these dogs would come back and say that the confidence levels of the child would significantly have improved. Mm. And from that, then, the communication skills can improve as well. I suppose when you reduce that overwhelming anxiety for the children, it kind of opens up then that ability to communicate a little bit easier, and, you know, there's less stress going on. They can focus on different things. They can learn. They can absorb more information, and they learn coping mechanisms to help them, you know, deal with the outside world that, you know, we would take for granted, you know, which could be sometimes quite distressing for these children. So, I mean, really, it has many, many benefits. The main purpose of the dog is obviously to keep the child safe.
Yes.
But beyond that, then the benefits are huge.
And Carla, how long does it take to train a dog?
So it takes up to 2 years to fully train a dog, and we start the dogs in training at 8 weeks of age. So when they're cute little tiny puppies, they'd start straight away with the socialisation and getting them used to different environments and different...
And then after that, you need foster homes for the puppies.
Yeah, so the foster families actually play a really important role in training the dogs. So the puppies would be with a foster family. They're actually in the foster care program for the first 12 to 15 months before they start their formal intensive training. And during that time, they'd probably stay for 6 to 8 months with maybe two foster families, because we like to move them from one family to another just so they can experience different environments. But without the foster families, we couldn't train these dogs.
Okay, what's required from the foster family?
So I suppose the main requirement that we'd be looking for is time. You know, there is a bit of time involved with taking these dogs to different places, and they would have to be integrated into the family, so they'd become part of the family. So if you're going to do the supermarket shop, you'd be expected to take the puppy with you. If you're going to your child's football game at the weekend, again, you know, you'd
and I've seen them, they wear vests that say puppy in training, do
that's
they?
That's right,
yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they have public access to everywhere that they need to go.
And the reason for all this is that when they arrive at the host family, who has a child with autism. They've experienced all of these different experiences, like being in
so
a supermarket.
It's really, really important when the puppies are young and, you know, they're maturing themselves, that they experience all these different environments.
Yeah.
Because when they go out and they start working, they are expected to go into all these environments. So
okay.
we need to make sure that they know how to behave appropriately, that they're not distracted by anything, and, you know, that they're happy going into lifts.
Now, there is a bit of a problem, I would imagine, for people who are foster parents for autism assistant puppies, and that is that they have to give them back.
Yeah, well, people often think that that's probably one of the hardest things, but having spoken to our foster families, actually, that doesn't really become an issue, because they see it as, you know, by taking on this puppy and doing the training with this puppy, you know, they're doing something for a child out there that desperately needs this support.
Okay.
They almost see it like it's their job, it's their contribution to the organisation. And what often happens is they'll have a puppy maybe for 6 or 8 months, and, you know, it would move on to the next foster family, or it would go into formal training.
Yes.
And straight away, you know, within a few weeks, they're looking for another puppy. And that's great. You know, that's fine. Most of our foster families will actually take one after another, which is fantastic, because they get such a buzz out of seeing that puppy progress. And we communicate with the foster family,
Carla,
the dog and everything.
Are they usually Labradors? Is that the type?
Yeah, so Labradors or Retrievers or a mixture of the two is the general breed. So, yeah, they do grow quite fast. So you might take on an 8-week puppy that's tiny, but they do grow very fast.
Yeah, you obviously have to vet families to be foster families.
Yep.
Info@aadi.ie. Info@aadi.ie. That's where people can apply to be foster parents for autism assistant puppies.
Yep.
Or you can ring this Cork number, is it 022-43851? That's 022-43851. And by coincidence, there's a TG Cahir documentary on tonight about autism assistant dogs. It's called Sale on Vodra Vaughan. And a number of people have brought our attention to that on text, so thanks for that. Okay, Carla, you're based down in Cork, are you?
Yeah, and at the moment we're actually only looking for foster families in the Munster area.
In the Munster area, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So, yeah.
We might come down and visit you in the new year. Maybe
we'd
do a
that.
Program from there. Okay, Carla, thanks very much.
No worries. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I'm a Celebrity is back again this year, and people are talking about it and watching it in their hundreds of thousands and millions in the UK. We decided to invite in freelance journalist Fionnuala Jones. Fionnuala, what's it like out there traffic-wise?
Not great now, thanks to the farmers, but we made it here in one piece, so that's
right.
All that matters.
And comedian Michael Fry. How are you doing, Michael?
Hello, I'm well. How are you?
Now, would you have been fans before this of I'm a Celebrity?
I've kind of dipped in and out, but last year I was fully back in the wagon with Harry Redknapp. It was just absolute television gold, like the most wholesome reality TV show character ever. So,
what was it about him?
Oh my God, he was just so funny and just so nice, and that whole camaraderie with the rest of the camp. And then you had his relationship with his wife that he was constantly talking about, like, just got to me, just melted my stony cold heart. Like, it was so good. So, so good.
What about you, Michael? Were you a fan of Harry Redknapp?
I am the opposite. So I watched it from probably like the start, like 2003, I think it was, like ages ago. And I missed it last year, but I've seen every series before that. So it's kind of, I wanted
what
to
What were you doing
that,
that 14 or 15 nights? Just missed the whole thing.
Just missed the whole asleep working.
Right,
I don't know.
Right. Just missed the whole thing.
The whole thing.
That's odd because like it's on for 3 weeks, isn't it?
I saw bits of it.
Yeah, obviously, right. Okay,
we all knew Harry Redknapp and his relationship with Fleur East was great. So we'd seen bits of that.
Yes,
but
yeah.
She taught him how to rap at one point, and he was saying things like "Peng." It was so good.
So that's last year, and everyone agrees that Harry Redknapp was, you know, he was gold. What about this year? Is there gold in it?
I think we're missing the Harry Redknapp character.
We're definitely missing that like kind of camaraderie and that kind of heartwarming stuff. And I think they're really gunning for a villain and tension this year more so than anything else.
Yeah, I felt it was very wholesome at the start. You know,
yeah,
I quite like Kate Garraway and people like that. It was very, very nice. But I think now the tiredness has set in, they seem a lot hungrier this year. Or something
yes,
like
they're
very
all hungry. And they look hungry.
Yeah.
Like within 2 days, they look like they've lost weight.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that they lose like a serious amount of stone in just in the week, like from going from, because how many meals a day was James Haskell eating? He was eating something like
4,000 calories a day.
Yeah, so he's definitely not.
James Haskell is a former international rugby player. He's a big man.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huge.
Now Andrew Maxwell, who's not a big man, but he seems to be the hangriest of them all.
God, yeah, he's extremely cramped. I'm so surprised. I kind of expect him to be like almost like the camp clown, I suppose.
Yeah.
And he's just, he's really kind of doing his own thing, not really participating massively, seems to be very quick to lose the rag. And that has me thinking they must be starving in there because he's just so snappy. I'm so surprised.
But I'm always like, comedians when they come in, I don't think they're ever that funny in real life. So it's kind of like you expect them to be funny telling jokes all the time. But actually we had like Dom Jolly in a few years ago and he was actually quite miserable.
Yeah,
so like,
God,
do you know what I mean? The people who win I'm a Celeb are never comedians.
I suppose the expectations are very high when it comes to funny people.
Yes, and he had his trial last night and I still don't think he pulled it off. I mean, it was him, it was his chance to shine because it was the first trial someone had been on their own and he just wasn't, he didn't bring the funny, but I think that's probably the hunger issue.
I thought the accent was funny then. I actually was kind of like, oh, like chuckling away, but maybe that's just because I'm really holding out hope for him still.
Yeah.
And himself and Ian Wright, who's a former Arsenal and England footballer and presenter, they're locking horns constantly.
But I think they're very similar people.
Is that it?
Problem, yeah. I think they're very used to their creature comforts and the tiredness and the hunger and all that kind of stuff. It's affecting the two of them. And they're the ones who are kind of cracking first. And that's why they're kind of fighting with each other.
Right.
Ian is just dying for a pack of digestives and like a nice warm bed and he's just sick of it. I love the passive aggressiveness though, like that's absolutely going to come to a head soon though and I can't wait. They're going to have a major.
So for people who aren't watching it, Andrew Maxwell went off and he got 10 out of a possible 12 stars. So popular when he came back to the camp because he feeds everybody.
Yeah.
And then instead of doing the dishes and it was his name on the rota or whatever, he decided he was going for a bit of a nap and Ian Wright wasn't too happy.
Caitlin, we'll do this up later. We don't need to be going down there in the heat of the day to clean up, please.
I'll be fine.
But I'm going for a nap.
Go for a nap. I'll get somebody else to go with me.
No, we'll
are you going
later
to shower?
I get James.
Oh, washing up. I hope
just
you.
Washing up.
Yeah. We just don't need to do it yet.
Just go take a nap. You got 10 stars. We're good. Yeah. Andrew got us 10 stars, meaning tonight we're going to eat well. If he wants to take a nap, let him go take a nap. I'm a professional dishwasher. I'm good at this stuff. I can handle it.
Who's doing that then? Who's doing the dishes?
Me and Clayton. He wants to rest, have a nap, and doesn't want to do it now. Clayton wants to do it now. It's just easy to do it. Save the drama, crack on.
It's amazing. This is what I'm saying. Some people's not cut out for success.
So he said Andrew Maxwell isn't cut out for success.
Like, because he didn't want to wash the dishes. Like, oh, so good.
Now, people who haven't watched it, there's been... Andrew claimed that he was being bullied by Ian Wright and that he was shouting over him. And then Andrew came back and said, I'm sorry, I was tired, I'm hungry. And they hugged it out. But there's definitely some friction bubbling under there.
That's happened a few times. Yeah. I've had to go and have a hug. And even last night, Ian Wright was gunning for an argument. He wanted to have a fight with him. And Andrew Maxwell was like, no, you're right. And he was like, didn't know what to do with himself. Yeah. He's expecting the argument.
Yeah, I think that's why you're right in that they're so similar. He was fully prepared and Andrew's just like, all right. And they just because he knew it would get to him. Mm. That's why I'm saying I think we haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg with that relationship and that confrontation. That's going to hit ahead, I think.
Isn't it very interesting to see? Because these are all public figures. So we think we know them. Mm-hmm. But yet when we see them in the jungle, they reveal the real person. Now, Louis Walsh is quoted in the paper today saying that we're seeing the real Nadine Coyle. Do you think if you decided that you were going to be a person before you went in, that you could maintain it?
No. I don't think so. I think you're under so much strain. You're under like conditions you've never been in before, like spiders, like having little sleep, having to sleep on the ground, being hungry all the time. There's no way you could continue a facade for that long and get away with it because there's other people in there who can read that, you know? So I don't think so. I don't think you could play a game in that kind of situation.
Yeah.
No, definitely not under those conditions and facing like some of your worst fears. Like the mask would absolutely slip. I think it would for me anyway. I'd be screaming my head off.
Right from the start, everybody was chomping at the bit to hear what Caitlyn Jenner would say about her family, and they're hanging on her every word, and I think she knows that and she's playing that card, is she?
Yeah, I kind of think she's like bread crumbing, some kind of stuff. She mentioned about how Kimberly didn't go to college, Kimberly Kardashian. And she was made some references to Kylie and Kendall. And I think that Miles was saying he'd love to go out with Kendall and stuff. But yeah, I think she kind of knows. I kind of thought she'd be a bit of a bigger figure, though. Like, she's very tame in comparison to what I was expecting. I expect her to be a bit more of a firecracker. But I think that's what the media wanted us to believe going into it, I think.
I think she's probably too relaxed because she's so used to that reality show environment.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it just felt like I'd kind of heard everything she had said before. So it was like, okay, this isn't that interesting to me. I want to hear from people I've never heard before from.
And she's also the oldest person in the jungle, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yes. Which means she's probably the most comfortable in her skin.
Definitely. And she's done it before. She did the US one. Yes. So like, I think this is kind of a walk in the park for her, to be honest.
Yeah. For what? Half a million? What are the rumours?
Who even knows? Half million, a million. The figure changes, I think.
Right. Half a million, they're saying. Ian Wright, he must have got a good old chunk of cash.
I'd heard he'd gotten similar enough.
So he's like, I think so. But to be fair, he's a big personality in it. He's actually, you know, he's worth the money.
Caitlyn Jenner,
I don't know.
Who has surprised you in a good way?
I love Kate Garraway. I don't know if it's the same for you, Michael, but I think she's so funny.
She's a presenter on morning television in the
like,
UK.
She's really genuine, really sweet, like, just really surprisingly funny, I think. I think she could end up doing really well. I love Roman. His impressions are so funny. I love Nadine, but I don't think she's getting enough airtime, unfortunately.
No,
I don't think we're seeing enough for her. I'd like to see her do a few more trials.
I was surprised by Jacqueline Jossa, who used to play Lauren in EastEnders. And obviously when you see a soap character, you assume it's the soap character coming on. And Lauren was a clown in EastEnders, so I expected a similar kind of clown to come on. But no, she's actually a really nice person. I think she's kind of just an every woman, just a really normal person who's coming in. And I'm kind of rooting for her. I kind of want her to win. But I also love Kate Garraway. I know what you're saying, in that she's just so genuine and nice.
Like, yeah, there was a scene last night where they all kept like jumping out of the bush to scare her. And it was, I was honestly creased watching it. Yeah. Like, just.
Who is going to win, do you think?
Oh, I don't think it's extremely clear cut.
Not yet.
I think.
Not yet.
Who's first to go, do you think?
I think Andrew could be in big trouble.
I would say Andrew Maxwell. Yeah, I don't think he's like, everyone has kind of like, Nadine Goyle hasn't gotten the airtime. He's gotten the airtime, and it's not good airtime. So I don't think he's got the support base that other people have over there.
Yeah, definitely. If you can.
Well, on his own admission on the first program, he said that nobody will know me.
Yeah, he seemed to be kind of a like an outlier when you heard the.
Why did they put him in, do you think?
I think it's, you know, the interview you did on a BBC News program. I think he's kind of dining out on that a little bit at the moment. So he got the I'm a Celebrity thing.
And that's what I was expecting from him. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for, and it hasn't happened yet.
Well, there haven't been any Brexit conversations, so.
That's what I want.
He's hardly going to bring it up.
Brexit conversation.
Wait for his moment.
He's just waiting in the long grass, waiting behind a tree to jump out when he hears the word Brexit. Somebody bring up politics, for God's sake. Or maybe they are talking about it and the producers have decided to edit it out.
Yeah, this thing, you'd wonder if it's simply a case of clever editing as well, that he's just being portrayed as that. But
it is election season as well, so I'm sure there's issues with bias and things like that when you talk about Brexit and stuff like that, because I know Ant and Dec are very cagey about mentioning anything like that.
Okay, so Andrew, to go, and you're sitting on the jungle fence when it comes to who's going to win.
I'd love to see Kate win, but I don't know if she will.
I'm going to say Andy Wyman. I think he's doing really well.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Kirk from Coronation.
Yes. Fionnuala, as always, thank you very much. Nice to meet you, Michael Fry. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thank you very much.
That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock live from Galway. We'll talk to you then. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.